9 a.m. on Halloween. Happy Halloween. You're listening to, that's my whole thing. I have nothing scary, nothing spooky.
Boo.
Yeah, I was going to go for that, but it's too easy. Anyway, it is Halloween morning, October 31st here in Atlanta. You're listening to Good Morning Atlanta, sponsored by World Trade Center Atlanta on Business Radio X, a proud 2012 member of Central Atlanta Progress. You can learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at atlantadowntown.com. I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon, and we've got a great show lined up for you today. Amazing guests here with us in the studio. AJ Robinson and Wilma Southern are here from Central Atlanta Progress. Welcome, guys.
Good morning.
And they're like old regulars at this point. I mean, you know.
Paid today.
That's right. You are? Wait a minute. Where's that coming from?
I did bring my trick-or-treat bag.
Excellent.
Candy. And also, we've got Wayne Lord here, who is president of the World Affairs Council of Atlanta. Wayne's going to be talking to us about the U.S.-Russia Business Council 20th annual meeting, which was just held here in Atlanta. Wayne's also a professor of international executive education over at the Robinson College of Business at Georgia State University. Wayne, how are you doing this morning?
Very well, thank you. Happy Halloween to
everyone. No one's wearing a costume. What's up with that? This is a bunch of boring people, boring business people in this room. Very sad.
Yep, everybody's just dressed up to do a lot of work.
I actually forgot about Halloween until I was driving in. And then I was like, oh, it's Halloween. I'm kind of over it. I don't know. What do you guys think? I did it with my kids and my kids. I have one kid. I'm duplicating now. But, and of course.
Exaggerating.
You know, I'm sure she'll be pleased to know she has siblings out there that she didn't even know existed. But I did it with her as she was growing up. She's still a big fan of Halloween, even though she's in college now. She's still, like, a year in advance, she'll be like, I know what I'm going to be for Halloween next year. Okay. And I did, I think starting somewhere in the middle school era, I put on the cat ears. I drew a nose on my face and three whiskers on each side. And that was it. And that was every year. I was like, happy Halloween. Here we go. That was it. Maybe I went like this. Meow. Done. Your best costume, Elizabeth?
Oh, I've had several. But I haven't dressed up in years.
Your very best was? Come on. Bring it to the table. Vampire? No. Bounty hunter? Something badass, I can tell. No? Anybody else at the table want to share their best Halloween costume ever? Or their kids? Anybody? No?
When I was young, I was a real fan of Lon Chaney, which tells how old I am. So I like to do inventive makeup stuff out of those horror films.
Oh, cool. Uh-huh. Did you take pictures of all that?
I have some of them. They are well hidden at home.
Children
might get a hold of them.
And make you do it again. That could happen. Anybody else want to share?
Well, in the previous life, I spent a lot of time in China, and Wayne will appreciate it. I dressed up as Chairman Mao.
Oh, that's awesome. You have pictures of that, I hope.
I do.
Awesome.
I didn't bring them because this was radio. I didn't think
I know. Well, it would have just been for my own benefit, not for the show. But, you know, I would have liked to have seen it. Wilma, anything?
I can't think of anything recently because I haven't dressed up in a long time. But, yeah.
Yeah, I was digging way back in my memory. I think my favorite of all time was when I was probably like in elementary school, and I dressed up as the Fonz. See, there I'm dating myself a little bit too. I was such a cute little Fonz.
Should have gone as Pinky Tuscadero.
I know, but I was trying to, like, you know, be different.
Yeah.
You know,
okay,
just mixing it up. So I'm always off trying to do something crazy. So there you
funny.
Go. I was the Fonz. Okay, Elizabeth,
right.
This is a business
Enough
show,
of the
so
levity.
Stop goofing off.
Can we get down to business here, please? I want to hear more about Downtown Development Day. We're a week out now, Wednesday, November 7th. This is the 10th year that we've done Downtown Development Day. So, and it's really the premier event of stakeholders here in the city to talk about what's next for Atlanta. So tell us what you guys are going to be talking about.
Okay, well,
I'm really getting excited.
Well, once a year, we gather people from who are interested in the real estate community primarily, but we'll take anybody who wants to come learn and kind of celebrate all about everything about development in our community. And part of it is to recognize things like wonderful design work that's taken place in the past, to honor some people with commitments to downtown, but also to inform people about what is current, what's going on, like the streetcar or like our Better Buildings Challenge. And a great part of it has become education. So people who come and need education credit for whatever profession they're in, we have educational credit available as well. So we'll gather about 400, 500 people, Wilma, and yeah. It's at America's Mart this year, November 7th. We start at 7:15 in a networking environment. It's pretty early, but that's when people actually do show up. And
That's when the business gets done, right? By the early birds.
That's right. And all our surveys each year show that networking is still a big part of our community. And we're ended by midday. We do have some optional lunch and tours of some of our downtown places that people seem to be interested year in and year out.
So 7 o'clock, be there at America's Mart. What are some of the agenda items?
Well, as AJ said, it is a half-day event. And so for us, it's an opportunity to really engage our attendees in an interactive environment. So 7:15, we start with registration and breakfast and networking. So again, great opportunity to come and meet your peers and potential clients. Then we go into a general session where we, as AJ said, we're going to recognize some award winners, most notably our Atlanta Downtown Design Excellence Award. We've done for, I think, 6 years now. And we work with four judges representing different organizations and businesses in downtown. And then the public has a say. So there are basically five opportunities to vote, the public and then the four judges. So all of this is kept very secret until development day. So we encourage everyone to come out and see who the best design winners are.
Now, can people still vote or is voting closed?
No, voting is closed. We had to get the trophies.
Yes, that makes sense.
We needed time to put their names on them.
But, I voted.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes, I did too.
We had a really, really great roster this year. It was very hard to vote, but I think everyone will be extremely excited when they learn the winners. We also will give an award for Atlanta Better Buildings Challenge Excellence Award. It's a program we started last year, and we will be recognizing exceptional sustainability design. And then we'll be honoring this year's Downtown Impact Award winner, who is David Marvin and Legacy Property Group. Has been a longtime investor and supporter of the downtown area. So we're very, very excited to celebrate all of David's contributions. So hopefully people will come out and help us to pay tribute to David. After the general session, we then have an expo portion of the event, and we have over 40 different exhibitors, another great opportunity to network. And then we go into four very impactful breakout sessions. So it's a full day. I think you can get a lot done if you join us.
You know, I feel like we get exposed to a lot of what's going on here in downtown, both just having our office here, our studio, but also because we get great people in the studio telling us about what's going on here. But do you feel like a lot of people that kind of show up on Development Day sort of aren't up on everything that's going on?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think people, you know, Atlanta is a very broad and wide real estate community.
Yeah.
And we have various nodes of activity, and some people's whole lives are tied to a particular submarket in terms of real estate. So I think that's the kind of folks we want to attract and get into this type of environment, because there's a lot goes on down here, as you know, being a tenant down here, that if you don't come on some regular basis, you miss it. There's just, even in this somewhat downturn or end of recession in the real estate community, there's still a lot going on. People have invested in their buildings. We've launched this sustainability effort of trying to save 20% of our energy and utility costs by the year 2020. Streetcar is under construction. I mean, there's always something going on, and I think this kind of event lends itself to kind of get people up to date.
Yeah, I think even something like the streetcar, I think most people know it's going on, but they probably don't know the details. Maybe they don't really know what the route is, or, you know, what the schedule is for getting it done and things like that. So I think it'll be, you know, again, we're kind of spoiled in here because the news people kind of come to us. Yeah. But for everybody else, go to Downtown Development Day. Okay, people?
And there's been so much talk about sustainability as really the mantra of Atlanta, and the Better Buildings Challenge has really put Atlanta on the map, like nationally, as a real model, and the streetcar as well.
Right. And you're right. I mean, I think we are, with both these projects, kind of working at different ends. The Better Buildings Challenge is an opportunity to kind of recast our stock of real estate down here, to kind of give it a new look, so that, you know, we have all across Atlanta, we have aging buildings, and we don't, there's, as you all know, there's not a whole lot of building development going on. So this is a chance really to kind of rebrand our stock of real estate and say, you know, this is something new. This is the next generation. We have over 42-45 million square feet of space that's signed up to invest in their buildings and take audits and look and see how they can save on energy and upgrade their buildings. So it's a great opportunity. As you said, we have received national acclaim, and we have a speaker coming down from the Department of Energy as part of our keynote to talk about where Atlanta fits in this whole national campaign.
And that sustainability as a trend, something else that we talk about a lot here is the younger workforce. And I've heard that tie in with the theme, the streetcar, creating a more walkable downtown community. How does the millennial generation and their increased participation in the workforce play into some of these themes that you'll be discussing?
Well, it fits in great. I mean, the downtown community is the youngest part of our whole market here. I mean, if you look at the different submarkets of real estate, because of Georgia Tech, because of Georgia State, the AU campus, we are the youngest real estate market in the metro area. And it's a new generation. This generation isn't thinking like, well, you're still pretty young. So thinking like those of us who have been here a while, and that some people don't have cars, they have bicycles, they want to be able to walk out their door, they're connected via their mobile device to everything. So the definition of community is a heck of a lot different. And in projects like the streetcar, bike paths, pedestrian access are the things that other cities look around are doing. So we are trying to compete with the Washingtons and the New Yorks and the Chicagos in order to attract these folks. And I think that's the one thing we mentioned about people who haven't been down here a while. When they come and see the impact of these students walking around downtown Atlanta, I think that it kind of opens their eyes. And they're not only just walking around, they're living down here.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that if you're not here on a day-to-day basis, it is quite surprising.
This is a big thing with my Georgia State hat on. I mean, we are very excited as a university. I know President Becker is. These developments also lend so much to the creation of our community for students who actually live in the heart of the city and are walking and going to class here. We, of course, the university has invested in a lot of the buildings downtown, but it's about creating an atmosphere where that generation can feel at home and feel excited and feel like they're in an environment that is sustainable and has all these new things that are happening.
I think it's really interesting. I mean, I have sort of two points I want to make. One, or questions, I guess. With Georgia State, I feel like initially when I first moved to Atlanta, which is a long time ago, it was really in the mind of, I think, a lot of people just a commuter school. And so, you know, but it's really changed, I think. I think there's a lot more of a Georgia State community feel now than there was 20 years ago.
It's changed a lot. We have thousands of students living in student housing, which wasn't true years ago.
Yeah.
We have also, and President Becker talks about this a lot, with the advent of the football team, we've all noticed there are a lot of blue T-shirts walking around that say Panthers on it.
That's awesome.
And we've just hundreds on any day. You can see students walking around with their Georgia State T-shirts or sweatshirts on. I think it, again, adds a lot of definition to the excitement that's going on downtown.
Well, that changes the character of downtown, I think, in a lot of ways. And as it relates to Downtown Development Day, any students going to be showing up there, do you think?
As a matter of fact, two of the panels that are in line with what we're discussing right now, One is reshaping Atlanta streetcar neighborhoods for the millennial generation. So it'd be 90 minutes, very, very great focused conversation about what's already starting to take shape. Along Edgewood Avenue in particular, that is a really hot spot right now for the younger generation. So we'll get into a much more focused conversation there. Then we also have a panel called Downtown Revealed, exploring the live, work, play, and learn environment that exists in downtown. So we do have a student from Georgia State who will be talking about his experience. We have a resident who whose children go to school downtown. We have a small business owner, and then Gene Kansas will be the moderator for that panel. So again, I think it will be very insightful. People will learn a lot about downtown that they probably did not realize before. So we encourage everyone to come out and hear what these folks have to say.
With all of these exciting projects, you're seeing more and more people make investments into downtown. But obviously, lending has changed a little bit over the last couple of years. There's always funding challenges or financing challenges when you talk about growth and redevelopment. Is that something that will be addressed also? And are there going to be plenty of bankers there to...
Yeah.
We talk always, dollars and cents.
Yeah, we always have bankers because even though in difficult times, they're always looking for customers of some sort. But we do have a breakout session on navigating the new reality in terms of the financial markets and what you can do. So that's always on the minds of real estate, the real estate community. And I think things are getting better, you know, anecdotally that in our area, our housing values are creeping back up. Our commercial inventory of office buildings everywhere across the metro area is getting slightly better. So I think people are beginning to come out of the woodwork and looking at new projects and trying to figure out how to get them financed.
If there's a good enough plan and team around the idea, usually you can put together something that's going to make sense and be a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. That still holds true no matter what market you're in.
And the walking tour, this sounds like fun. So for the lunch, you get to get a peek inside of some of downtown's great real estate buildings. Wilma, Where can we go on the walking tour?
Well, for this, we mix it up every year, and for the past 2 years, we actually put about 40 to 50 of our attendees end up staying for this event on a bus, and we took them on the streetcar route last year. The previous year, we went to the multimodal passenger terminal site. So we decided this year we really wanted to reinforce how walkable downtown is. So we will attendees will have an option to go to one of three properties. One is Peachtree Center, the other is SunTrust Plaza, and then the American Cancer Society for a tour of those. They've all been doing a lot of work and renovation, and they really want to show off their developments. And then everyone will come over and join us in the residences at the W downtown for dessert and coffee and get to see some of those beautiful residences that are downtown.
A good time. So, tickets still available.
Tickets
but
are
running out.
Oh,
buy
yeah.
them immediately if you're listening.
And we got special Halloween pricing today.
That's right. Boo. And yeah. You can get them at atlantadowntown.com.
That's right, atlantadowntown.com. Just look for the Downtown Development Day icon on the front page, and that'll take you through to the ticketing site.
And I think we should point out that you don't have to be already downtown to want to learn more about it. So if you're a professional that's, you know, maybe thinking about relocating an office down here or wanting to come downtown to live, come on. And check it out. This is a good way to do it.
Absolutely. And one highlight we have that we're going to unveil, so I won't give you too many details, but we know that people who aren't downtown every day are talking about it like you all are, just have a different perception
right.
of what really is here. So we will unveil a video that basically shows the real downtown. And I think that a lot of people will be really surprised to see what's in the video. And we'll be offering that as a great tool for anyone who, you know, is marketing downtown as part of their job. So
very exciting.
It's hard to do on radio, though.
That is hard to do on radio. We yeah. make it sound really good, but it's a little bit different. Next thing is going to be smell-o-vision. Just saying. You know, but the nice thing about radio, of course, is we don't all have to have our best outfits on and our makeup done and, you know, our hair and all of that. So.
And you
but
can
we
wear do. Your Halloween costume.
Yes, you guys look gorgeous. That's right. You could all be in costume right now. I could be lying. That's I could right. be sitting here with goblins and
right.
vampires
Ghosts,
and all kinds
witches.
Of things. Right.
Spooky day here.
That's right.
Well, we're so glad you guys were able to stop by the studio and keep us posted about all that's happening with Downtown Development Day. We're certainly looking forward to it. And you'll have to give us a recap after the fact.
Sure. We're happy to come back.
Absolutely.
Thank
Terrific.
You for having
Great
us.
To see you guys.
Thank you, guys. All right, Elizabeth, as we continue on with this morning's show, should we move on to the scary headlines?
Yes.
Since it is Halloween. We should be scary. I pulled some interesting headlines today. I don't know why, but I was in a very serious professional mood. Because usually, you know, I pull the headlines that are just fun to talk about.
In your
about.
Goblin costume, no less.
I know.
That's amazing.
No less. I usually like to just do the fun stories, you know, where Atlanta falls on the list of dirtiest cities and things like that. But today, it seemed like when I was sort of, you know, surfing the internet looking for stories, there were just so many mergers going on that I felt like I had to talk about it, even though a lot of it's not Atlanta related. I did pull one, I think, that's specifically Atlanta related, but I just had to go over some of these because when all these big companies start merging together, I don't know, I get a little concerned that the consumer is going to suffer. And so,
sure. I mean, that's the nature of, you know, antitrust legislation and why
right.
mergers are monitored by the SEC, et cetera.
Of course. And I certainly am not an expert on any of that, but I do know that when you put a rule out there, that is great because it does control some things, but it also gives all these really smart people, the encouragement, if you will, to start thinking about ways to get around the rules and break the rules but not actually break them and illegally, but just, you know, circumvent them as best they can.
In business school, we call managing around the regulatory environment.
See?
See?
You teach that even.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable. So it'll be interesting to hear your feedback on some of this too. But for starters, you know, I always like to tell stories about, not fibs, but, you know, actual news stories about the publishing industry, because I'm a former bookstore owner, as everyone knows. And so right now it looks like Penguin and Random House are going to be merging. And they are, yeah, two of the biggest powerhouses in publishing. It's funny, one of my best friends is an author who used to be with Random House and wasn't entirely happy there and moved to Penguin. And now they're going to be merging back together. She's sort of like,
there's no escape.
That's right. So anyway, that's kind of an interesting, I mean, everybody I think who is paying attention at all to publishing knows how much of a struggle that industry is having right now.
Absolutely. Know, so no surprise that they would be looking for ways to cut costs
consolidate.
And get some economies of scale or
right.
increase.
I think
economies.
It's always interesting to look at a business like this where, you know, I mean, think about 8-track tapes, sadly, and things, music in general, I guess, is sort of went through all of this before books did. And I don't think people are going to stop reading, just like they didn't stop listening to music. But, you know, the printing of books on paper is diminishing, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it. If you look at it from a green and sustainable standpoint, it's probably good that we're producing less paper. You know, if you look at it from a historical, just sort of touchy-feely, you know, heartstring kind of side, people like their paper books, and it's kind of sad to see that going away. And, you know, as a former independent bookstore owner, it's sad to see independent bookstores going away and all of that. But, you know, as companies go, they have to figure out how to make money at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
So I hope that with these two powerhouses merging, we don't see huge, you know, price increases on ebooks or, you know, I don't know. Well, I guess we'll just have to kind of stay tuned and see what happens. But
I think with, the challenges that industry is facing right now, it's more a matter of just allowing those companies to have the capability to continue to remain afloat and be profitable
yeah.
in a time when the margins are slipping on their product, when they're seeing their entire sales and distribution model change dramatically.
Right.
It's easier to weather those kinds of storms when you have a heftier size or heftier balance sheet behind you.
Well, right. When you have more of the big sellers and you have more, yeah, I mean, you know, all of that works in your favor, just like, and then you can hopefully, you know, in their mind, I guess, cut some of the things that are duplicated across both companies.
Having consulted for hundreds of very large organizations over the years of my career, there's always waste going on in any large company. You can always find things that you could do without.
Yeah, yeah.
Areas where you can cut.
Yeah.
So those opportunities are ripe and continuous. And in order to remain lean and you know, nimble as an organization, I think you continue to look for where are we wasting time? Where are the opportunities to trim back? Because things always need to be trimmed.
You know what's really funny, and you can talk to this too, Wayne. You say that that happens in big companies. I have experienced that happening in companies as small as 3 and 4 people. Right. I mean, it is
there's
like
one person not doing anything.
Right. I mean, there's one person, and it's your own company, and you're just a solo entrepreneur, and you're out there. You tend to be pretty efficient because you don't really have a choice. But the minute you get a partner, and then 2, and then 3, forget it. Waste starts. You know, people start spending time on unnecessary meetings. And, you know, it's just amazing how you put a bunch of people together and there's automatically time wasted, right? And resources.
You mentioned the millennials are on the book publishing side of that. Many of students at Georgia State, I mean, they wouldn't consider, unless they are required to do so, having hard copy books.
Right.
So many things are available through our various mechanisms to get put it on there. Their devices that they can read anytime, any place, and I think that's part of the development that's happening.
And you know, of all people, and we'll get off this story in a second, but of all people, you'd think that I would be the one that would be hardcore paper books, because I did own an independent bookstore before the days of ebooks, and so, you know, I really do love to read. I mean, you've come into my condo; it's all filled with books everywhere. But I actually really like reading on my e-reader devices. I have more than one and I really do like it, and I've gotten spoiled. And, you know, there are things that you can do, you know, forget just the fact that you're not carrying around books that, especially in college, that weigh 17 pounds, you know, and breaking your back, that you can have it all on one little piece of equipment, but you can also have it wherever you are. So, you know, if you happen to be waiting in line at the grocery store and you don't have your backpack with all your books in it, you might have your phone that has your e-reader device, so you can stand there and get some of your studying done, right? You also have things like you can push, you know, with the touch of a finger, you can highlight something and then you can look at all the things you highlighted later in one place. I mean, there's some really cool things that make reading, especially reading to learn, so much nicer in the electronic world. So I, as long as people keep reading, I'm okay with whatever format it's in. I don't really care if it's paper or electronic, as long as they keep reading. That's critical.
The only other point in this conversation is about the whole lean movement, that a lot of people assume that it's only about cuts and cutting people and cutting jobs. That's actually not the concept at all. It's about efficiency.
Sure.
But more importantly, it's about flexibility. We've always said in business school and in businesses, which I was in part of some big corporations, it's not just about the ability to cut cost. It's about the ability to be flexible in a market that's always had scope and complexity, but now velocity is the big thing. How fast can you change? Are you first? Are you best? Are you nimble, as we said before?
Right.
And I think that's a very important thing that's happening in a lot of industries, not just the publishing industry.
Well, I do think
that's true, and that nimbleness can be impeded by size. So sometimes that's where you find an acquisition work against you.
Yeah, that's
because
true.
Because now you're twice the size, and it takes you twice as long to turn the corner.
Yeah. You know what else I think is interesting? When it's an older industry like publishing, which has been around for such a long time, there are so many traditions and people sort of set in their ways. This is how we've always done things. This is where getting millennials into the workforce, I think, is so positive. And publishing does tend to be an industry that attracts young people. Now, whether or not they let them make any decisions is a whole other story, but I think they should, because there are a lot of things, again, not to get too deep into this, but, you know, there are things like Penguin has, you know, I don't know how many, but a bajillion, we'll say, different imprints. And so, you know, they have classics and they have, you know, contemporary this and his, you know, mystery that and whatever, all these different imprints. And I don't think consumers really know or care about that. And so they're spending a lot of marketing dollars and a lot of time and energy around these sub-brands, essentially, that are sort of meaningless to the consumer. So
always opportunities to do things better.
Right. And so hopefully they will. And hopefully with all that, what we'll end up with, hopefully, is better access to more great writing.
Right.
You know? I mean, I think ultimately that's the goal. And speaking of great talent and having access to it, Disney is now set to buy Lucasfilm for $4 billion.
Yep.
That is one rich man. Just saying. And of course, that means that George Lucas will have a big stake in Disney. That's really what's going to be happening there as part of that deal.
Yeah, and Disney will be able to do things with the Star Wars brand.
Right.
And
right. So I don't, there was not a whole lot to talk about with that. I just thought it was kind of interesting. And somebody was telling me recently about George Lucas's attitude towards money and his children, not unlike Warren Buffett. From what I understand, he says that his kids, he buys them each, I think he has three or four kids, each a car, and he pays for their college education, and the rest is his money, and they know that. It's his money. Sorry. And he says if they have a good business idea and they want to come talk to him, he's open to it. He'll invest. But he is not, they are not growing up like the Paris Hiltons of the world. And good for him.
It's smart.
Okay.
It's great. Well, George Lucas, I heard an interview, and he was talking about it's just incredible with all of his creativity and all of his success. What he says, why are you doing this? You'd think it would be some kind of financial answer or some other thing about how he really likes Disney and he thinks they'll be a good steward of the Star Wars brand and other things he's created. But what he really says is it gave me a chance to do some other creative projects that I've been putting off for a long time.
So he can just sort of get rid of the management of it and take the money and do something else.
Some really experimental films. I can't wait to see what those would be.
Can you imagine?
Right, if we have not seen George Lucas's full creative potential at this point, wow.
I know. Well, I mean, it makes sense. There's so many more tools available now than when he originally made Star Wars. Can you imagine? And you know how groundbreaking that was at the time.
Right.
That if he really goes off the deep end, we're going to be in for a treat, you know? Speaking of films, I'm going to totally detour. Because I saw a very good film over the weekend that I just need to tell everyone to go see, which is Argo. So if you haven't seen it yet, you have to. And I would like to say the main quote from the movie, but it's rude, so I'm not going to say it. But I think a new saying will be populating the world after seeing this movie. You can all go see it and then email me if you know what it is. Dana@businessradiox.com. And if you make that the subject of your email, I might even find a little prize for you. Just saying. Great movie, though, and it was interesting talking about the time period. It made me think of it just now talking about, you know, George Lucas starting in the 70s, I think, is when Star Wars started. And Argo takes place in the 70s during the Iran hostage crisis. And I was at book club last night, and we have a great range of ages at our book club. And I was sitting next to two young women in their 20s who had also gone and seen the movie and didn't know anything about the Iran hostage crisis, didn't remember it, didn't know anything about it, never was, you know, taught about it in school, nothing. And I just thought it was so interesting because I grew up, you know, with that happening, and it was a huge thing when it was happening.
Right.
And to think it's like lost to...
That's something so recent and so important in international affairs for the U.S.
just
could not be on the radar
right.
of the millennials.
Well, and I was talking to them, I was saying, you know, for them, things like... you know, Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden and things like that. I mean, some of those obviously will be taught in school as time goes on, but some of them will get lost, just like the Iran hostage crisis. Kind of interesting. All right, moving on. Go see Argo, and let's talk about Apple for a minute. Big shakeup at Apple in terms of executives, people moving out, other people moving in,
yeah.
People that didn't last very long, all kinds of things. So basically after Steve went away, things are not going so well. And the thing is, you know, for Apple, they're still such a leader and such a huge phenomenon, but they're doing things that, like, they were always exceeding expectations. And for the last, I think, several quarters, they've come just under Wall Street's expectations for them, which, you know, again, not bad. They didn't do poorly. They just didn't exceed like we're used to seeing. So it's just kind of an interesting ride going on there. And I think it might be another couple years before it finally shakes out. Because I think they're just going to keep trying people until they get it right. But we'll see.
Absolutely. I mean, now it's sort of a different age for Apple. I think they're entering a different stage of the business.
More mature.
Having been, on the growth spectrum, the high growth spectrum for a while now, adjusting to what it's like to have have the stable of products that they've got, have the kind of customer base that they've built up, still looking to acquire new customers but continue to engage the existing and get them to continue to buy new Apple products continuously.
I think it's interesting, too, because for a long time they were sort of the underdog, you know, until the iPhone. It was not the iPhone, I guess.
Well, exactly.
But they were sort of the underdog.
They played the role as the underdog
right, to
Microsoft.
Correct. And not anymore. And now Microsoft is playing catch up to Apple. And so now they're the leader, right? So when you're the leader, you have to do things differently. And everybody's looking at you all the time and expecting everything you do to be 100% successful. And they talk about things like they brought out Siri, I guess, with the iPhone 4S, I guess was the first one. And how that's been like, okay, but not spectacular. Like Siri's cool. It's okay, but it's not amazing. And then there was their Maps product, I think, was a big disaster. And there have been a few products like that where they just haven't been good. And so because they're the leader now, it's sort of, you know, we'll see what happens. And then Microsoft is now, at least from my perspective as a consumer, is playing catch up. And will they? You know, lots of people still using Microsoft, obviously, in the workplace. But consumers, you know, at home, I don't know. They're trying to come out with their new tablet and they just seem really behind to me with the phone and they're trying to copy the stores and I don't know.
A lot of changes going on.
Okay. And closer to home, Home Depot just closed a deal to buy U.S. Home Systems. So they're growing, still growing.
And I think Home Depot is going to see a nice little blip from all the storm damage that's going on. They've already started.
Yeah.
Shipping storm recovery products out. So
amazing.
That'll be good for their bottom line as the Northeast and really along the East Coast, we'll see people starting to tackle repair projects out of Hurricane Sandy.
Yes, and lots of people are going to have to do that, unfortunately. So I guess good for Home Depot, but not so good for all the people that are trying to figure out which side of the hammer you're supposed to use, because that's what I'd be doing. But U.S. Home Systems, it's kind of an interesting kind of like a brand licensing sort of. Their products have been in Home Depot for some time. They do all that resurfacing, bath resurfacing and that type of thing. And now I guess Home Depot said, okay, you did a good job. We'll buy you. So I guess there's hope for everyone. You know, if you get your products into a good big brand like that, you might make, I don't know, some kind of bajillion, I don't know, 93.4 million or something like that. Okay. And also,
I love it when you talk numbers, Dana.
I know. I'm so specific and technical, aren't I? It's really pretty.
A bajillion.
I'd like to have a bajillion dollars. Who wouldn't? Come on. If you said it like that, everybody would say yes, I bet, right? New Rubbermaid on the downside. We always report the good news here when companies are growing and, you know, Caterpillar coming here and all these great things. But New Rubbermaid right now cutting 2,000 jobs and reorganizing. So is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? It's bad for Atlanta probably because a lot of those jobs are probably here.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you ever can say, oh, that's great. Huge job cuts. But again, you know, resources go to where they're being used the most efficiently. So those people will find another home in another place where they're using their skills and talents to grow an organization.
Well, let's hope so. And you know what? As a consultant, I should ask you, one of the things that I've always found irritating when I've worked for companies of all sizes, really, again, probably except for maybe the four-person type companies, but 100 and up, is that when things get tight, the first thing they often do is cut heads, you know, is cut jobs. Is that always the best way to be more efficient, Miss Consultant?
Not necessarily.
Or Mr. Professor?
I mean, your human resources costs and your salaries, your payroll is going to be one of your largest expenses, depending on what type of business it is. But it's always going to be one of the areas that you look first, especially as we look at, you know, healthcare costs continuing to rise. That's increased the burden of, you know, carrying each full-time employee on your regular payroll. So it's becoming more expensive. A lot of companies are looking to change up the way that they do business, becoming more reliant on contractor or temporary resources so they can have a more nimble workforce and not necessarily be carrying FTEs with the full burden cost of a person. So that might be another area. But there's certainly other areas that you can look at cutting costs. I'd have to do a full analysis of New Hell Rubber Made
right, to see.
Make my official recommendations.
That's right.
Though the key thing is what you said before, which is the allocation of resources. All companies, including New Hell Rubber Made, are positioning not just in the United States market or even the North American market, they're positioning in the global market to understand how best to be, create competitive advantage all over the world.
Right.
Their line of products is one that can be used universally and is used all over the world. They are rather significantly expanding in what we call the emerging markets. And when you do that, you're going to reassign some people, maybe reassemble your resources, including human resources, to address those markets. As the middle class grows in a number of countries around the world, in these fast-growing economies, even if they slow down a little bit in the economic crisis, many countries in what we call the emerging markets are continuing to grow in terms of GDP, but especially the middle class is growing, and they want the products like a company like New Hell Rubbermaid offers. So it's a
Brazil, Indonesia, there's a lot of these other economies that are experiencing this exactly what Wayne's talking about here. So it's really a matter of finding where those growth areas are now. Maybe everybody in Atlanta already has Tupperware.
Yeah, it's interesting. Even in big companies, I'm sure when you're the person that's getting laid off, of course, if you look around and you I feel like you can, even if you're not the person getting laid off, but I feel like when I've, again, worked for companies of various sizes, I've looked around at waste, not from always there's an employee that you think should probably go because they're wasting time. But usually there's projects that you look at as an employee and you say, why are we doing this? You know, there's money being spent. For example, I think it was this week, my boyfriend got a letter in the mail from his mortgage company that was just thanking him for contacting them. And he was like, are you kidding me? Like, what a waste of paper. Why did they send this to me? So they're sending that piece of paper out to everybody who contacts them for any reason. You know how much money they could save if they stopped doing that? It's like for one guy, it's, you know, whatever, 35 cents, big deal, or whatever, 50 cents. But if that's going out all over and it's nothing, it's meaningless to him. It's ridiculous. So there's things like that. I really would love to see maybe we should get some efficiency experts in here to talk about some of those things, because I would love to see companies look through some of the things they're doing like that before they cut people, you know? Anyway. All right. Two more sort of just quick mentions. One, I guess everyone who's been to the gas pump has noticed that gas prices are coming down a little bit. So yay for that. And then last but not least, two stories about holding onto your bags with both hands at Atlanta Airport. One is that I just read a story I think it was on the Business Chronicle, about thieves snatching bags from Atlanta Airport carousels. And at the same time, they also had a survey on the Business Chronicle about theft by TSA at Hartsfield-Jackson Airport. That we actually, you know me and my lists, we actually rank number 4 for TSA firings due to theft. And then the survey asked if people worry about being ripped off in Atlanta's airport, and 78% said yes, they do worry about it. And so not only do you have to worry about it as you're going through security, but you also have to make sure you hold on to your bags or get to your carousel fast and get your bag, which is so interesting, because do you remember in the old days when you had to show your baggage claim ticket to walk out of baggage claim? And now you don't have to do that, because all of everyone's attention is focused on not letting bombs in. So they don't care who takes the bags. And I guess that's a better use of their funds, is to protect us all from being blown up and not so much to protect our stuff. But it does make traveling a little bit more stressful, don't you think?
Well, I guess just don't pack your nice stuff.
I guess. But also, when you steal somebody's bag, like, can you imagine?
Well, that's the thing. It's an odd thing to take, right? Like, if I opened up Wayne's luggage,
right, and you're like, sweet,
not of any event. Use to me, right? I mean, like, so it would be hard to pick what would actually be worth, yeah, taking, because
right.
You don't know what you're getting.
No, exactly. So obviously, carry your jewelry and your carry-on, anything of real value, carry on with you. But that's so interesting too, because TSA, like, if you put your, I can't even imagine, like, putting my stuff through the conveyor belt and having something missing while I'm being searched or whatever, that is freaky. Because you wouldn't even expect that. Like, I feel like somebody grabbing a bag off the carousel, you know, you could imagine that happening, whether on purpose or by accident. But not being able to trust the people that are there that are supposed to be, like, helping us, I don't know. It just makes me sad. And of course, it proves you can't win, because if you carry on all your jewelry and then TSA steals it, you're screwed. All right, that's it for the headlines, if you can even call them headlines.
And now Thanks, Dana.
I've made myself sad now.
No. I want to hear all about this Russia Business Council annual meeting that Wayne's come here to tell us. So, Wayne, this was a big event for Atlanta that just took place last week. You wrote a editorial in the Atlanta Business Chronicle. What was that? A week ago that it was in the paper. This is a really big deal to have a conference like this in Atlanta. Tell us more about it and about, you know, who was here, who was involved, and what took place.
Well, the U.S.-Russia Business Council is the most important of the trade association business councils that deal with U.S.-Russia business relations. But it is a policy organization, too, and this organization advocates for better trade relations and policies that support better trade relations between Russia and the United States. It is it's a 20-year-old organization. It's grown to be very powerful because it has powerful members. Holding the 20th annual conference in Atlanta was very significant. We had never had their annual meeting here. They usually have been in places like Washington or San Francisco or something. First documented that a very major business organization, because their business is both from the United States and from Russia, who were here, that they located here in Atlanta. Well, there are reasons for that. One of the big reasons is the Coca-Cola Company. The Coca-Cola Company was a motive force to get the conference here, no doubt, because of their long involvement with the association and their tremendous investment in Russia over many years. Neville Isdell, the former chairman and CEO of the Coca-Cola Company, is still chairman emeritus of the board of directors of the organization. Clyde Tuggle, who is the chief global governmental affairs and communications officer for the Coca-Cola Company, is on the board. And Muhtar Kent, as chairman and CEO of Coca-Cola, has been instrumental not only in his current leadership role in the company, but in earlier roles where he promoted and led significant investment in Russia. But there are other Atlanta companies that are also involved in this important organization, and they include UPS and AGCO, GE Power and Water, or GE Energy, based right here in Atlanta, and they are doing huge projects in Russia today. You mentioned another one of our companies. We call it a Georgia company now, Caterpillar. They're a major sponsor of the conference. Other companies that are not based here in Atlanta, but well-known names like Alcoa, Pfizer, Visa, ExxonMobil, Chevron, Ford, just to name a few of the people very involved with the U.S.-Russia Business Council. And so to have these major companies and their CEOs and leading executives come here, and also Russian companies like Rusnano, which is the leading nanotechnology company in Russia and a very major investor in certain aspects of high tech in the United States as well as around the world. This kind of company was here, again, showcasing Atlanta and saying that Atlanta is a destination for this very significant high-level conference that has to do with the future of U.S.-Russia business relations, and by extension, the relationship between the countries on a diplomatic and geostrategic level, too.
Now, we were talking earlier about countries with a growing middle class. As Russia's economy is recovering, you're seeing that middle class continue to surge, the demand for consumer products. How is that affecting the overall dynamic in Russia economically?
Well, for some time since the breakup of the Soviet Union in 1991, so we've only had 20 years of experience, hence even the age of the association itself. Very interesting that the association started right after that change. But one of the great drivers of the fact that why a Coca-Cola or a UPS or a Global Payments or Equifax and other companies are in Russia is because of the rise of the middle class. Their GDP growth, with some glitches over the last 20 years, has been very significant, and certainly the development of the middle class, not only in Moscow but around the country, has continued to be quite a remarkable thing. And so the demand for products that would consumer products especially, including automobiles and refreshing beverages, packaged services, are there and growing. Another aspect, in addition to the middle class, is Russia has always been a traditional agricultural company. So our big agricultural equipment company, AGCO, based here in Atlanta, has significant investment in Russia and is doing a big job. They have, because of the growth of the agricultural sector in Russia after the breakup of the Soviet Union, agriculture declined, but now it is starting to really build back, and AGCO is positioned for that development.
Now that Russia is a member of the WTO, what are the new opportunities that are emerging there for investors and exporters?
Well, the first thing to say about the World Trade Organization, the accession to the WTO that happened this summer, this is a tremendous development in world economics because Russia has never been a member of the WTO. China is a member, all kinds of, almost every significant country other than Russia had been a member of the WTO. What that does now that they are a member is they, therefore, must conform to the international trading regime, the rules, the regulatory environment, the transparency that comes with being in the WTO. Plus, if there are disputes in contracts or in business relations, you have now a mechanism, any company would have a mechanism to address that through WTO processes. There is a detail on that, though, is that there's still pending in the United States Congress the permanent normal trade relations legislation that goes along with WTO. We're the only major country and major trading partner of Russia that has not passed that legislation yet. The U.S.-Russia Business Council is advocating that passage, and it may be taken up in the lame duck session after the presidential election. The Russia trade is significant. They're a major importer of a lot of things. I've already mentioned the presence of investment of Coca-Cola and other companies. But we should also remember for the state of Georgia that the poultry industry, I was in that industry for a lot of years, the poultry industry has been a major supplier of poultry products to Russia over many years and still is. It's one of our biggest exports from Georgia is poultry, and of that, Russia plays a big part in importing. Again, because of the rise in the middle class, the demand for food products, protein, meat products, and that plays favorably into our wider Georgia environment and agricultural sector.
Now, what about Russia's reach to the east, the Asia-Pacific region? Was that also a topic discussed?
Yes, there was a whole panel on that where Russia is looking both to the west, which they've done traditionally since I think Peter the Great in the 18th century, looking for what kind of relationship, both commercial and political, that they want to have with Europe and the west. But also looking to the east. The eastern two-thirds of Russia happens to be where their natural resources lie, or at least the main part of them, all of their oil, gas, minerals, metals, so that Boeing, the oil companies, are all out there. As they move to the east, of course, that has to do with their relationship politically and economically with China. And China is looking to Siberia and the eastern part of Russia as a major source for their own growth because they need all those raw materials, which they themselves do not possess, or at least not in the volumes necessary for the kind of growth that China has experienced and plans to continue to experience. So Russia is very interestingly placed between the huge European market, and by extension the Western market on the one hand, and the Chinese and the Asian market on the other. There was a lot of discussion of that. We had chief executives of Alcoa, an international paper there, senior executives of all the companies I've mentioned, including the Coca-Cola company, to look at what are these changes in Russia, how are they going to impact their future plans for expansion and development as Russia moves more and more emphasis to the east. That will mean that all companies will also have to be placed there to be effective in the market.
So with the conference itself, is the goal of the conference to talk about policy and try to come up with policy decisions, or is it more to educate people attending about what's happening there? How does it kind of shake out from that standpoint?
Well, like all conferences, you have a lot of content and certainly a big focus. We had a senior person from the State Department, Robert Hormats, who is a distinguished and experienced person in the Russia relationship, the resetting of Russian relations, as it was called at the first of the Obama administration. So the big policy issues, certainly WTO accession, the kind of supporting legislation that is required to implement that, and so that America, the United States, can take advantage of the benefits of WTO relationship with Russia, that's talked about. But there were sector panels talking about agriculture, talking about intellectual property, telecommunications, consumer credit, banking. A wide range of sectors were discussed. The oil and gas industry, of course, very important in Russia. That was discussed. So you had a wide range of issues that are focused on what are those industries in Russia that are developing, and how does that tie into our development. Nanotechnology would be one example that was discussed a lot because Russia has a lot of very innovative technology in the nanotechnology space. And, of course, we have Georgia Tech and a lot of our own assets here in Atlanta that are interested in that, to say nothing of the wider United States marketplace. So there was a lot of content. But like all conferences, the most important thing is the networking. That the people that attended, the hundreds of people who attended this conference, are the leaders, many of the leaders in Russia, United States business, and the policy or support industries that go around that business environment. So it really had a lot of conversations in the hallways and the dinners and the breakfast also about that. The final session that actually the World Affairs Council of Atlanta co-sponsored with U.S.-Russia Business Council was a panel that focused on investment. How do cities and regions attract investment? And we had a very interesting session with former Mayor Richard Daley of Chicago talking about how Chicago does their own city development. It was good, since we were in Atlanta, to do some kind of comparison on that. We had a young deputy minister and deputy governor of one of the big regions, or states, if you want to call them, south of Moscow, called the Tula region. It's a highly industrialized region as well as agriculture. So it was very interesting to hear how the Russians also developed their own investment strategies to attract investment, and we did some comparison. And finally, we had Terrence Burns, who is president of Helios, which is an organization that promotes cities for the Olympics. He was involved, Terrence Burns, with Delta early on, and then with Atlanta Olympics, and then has represented Sochi, Russia, in the World Cup to get that for 2018 and so forth. So to look at even a specific event like the Olympics, and how did that raise the profile of Atlanta? How is it raising the profile of Sochi for the Winter Olympics in a couple of years?
It's beyond just the major metropolitan areas, because a lot of them are becoming more and more saturated with people. So we're looking at how did some of these regions attract and make themselves attractive to outside investment capital as well. Well,
that's exactly right. The same thing that is happening in Russia that's happened here, where states and cities are in competition with them inside the country.
Right, Atlanta versus Charlotte
attracting
kind of
the investment. I did want to say before we close that Georgia State University Robinson College of Business has a long relationship with Russia, especially through Moscow State University and many programs and processes that we've been involved in. Dean Fenwick Cuss of the Robinson College has been going to Russia since 1991. We have a relationship currently with Moscow State University, Department of Economics, about business, about innovation, about how they are positioning themselves in the world economy and looking at globalization from a very broad-based perspective, so that we're part of the U.S.-Russia Business Council so that we can have a seat at the table to talk about what those developments are and position Georgia State in that marketplace in the right way going forward.
That's terrific. Well, I'm so glad you were able to come by and tell us all about that conference.
I know, and also to help us kind of get through some of these mergers and acquisitions and whatever in the headlines. So we really appreciate it.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to our guests, Wayne Lord, President of the World Affairs Council of Atlanta and Professor of International Education over at Georgia State University. And earlier you heard from A.J. Robinson and Wilma Southern with Central Atlanta Progress. This is Good Morning Atlanta, sponsored by the World Trade Center Atlanta. Check out WTCAtlanta.com. I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
And I'm Dana Barrett. Of course, you've been listening to Business Radio X, a proud 2012 member of Central Atlanta Progress. You can learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at AtlantaDowntown.com, where you can also sign up for Downtown Development Day. And of course, be sure to stay tuned to our station right here for some more great programming as the day continues. Have a great one, and we'll see you next week.